cruza, está Chucky, viene la primera, viene. Engancha para pegarle, viene.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, and I am here with James Lewis of Manchester City fandom and Dr. Pete of Tottenham fandom. James, we've been seeing a lot of penalty kicks in this one. I have to ask you, what's your strategy for taking penalty kicks?
Good question. I'd like to pick a spot, keep that spot in my mind, and I just hit it every time. Same spot.
And you smash it, too. It's not smash like it. You just hit it. You're a smasher.
Yeah, I'm not asking a question. I'm making a statement.
I think that's a good way to do it. Dr. Pete, what's your penalty strategy?
Well, I think you can smash it in the same spot unless you're a professional soccer player and people have video of you hitting your last six in the same spot. And yeah, it doesn't work as well.
True.
Which is why I think it's interesting. A lot of these teams they hire people to send them, or they'll pay for stats on a team they're about to play. Like, let's say England makes it to the semifinals against Brazil, then they're going to get a bunch of data and look at Brazil's last 50 penalty kicks from each of their players, or last 10. So I think that aspect is pretty interesting. Myself, I usually go outside the left foot into the left corner, 7 for 7 in my career, and I'm retired from penalty kicks.
Yeah, I like that outside of the left. I always go in step right towards the, right post if we are facing the goal, because I feel like if I hit it incorrectly, the bend on the ball will come back in, and I am not 100%. I missed 2 penalty kicks in my life, one of them when I was 12, and I hit the post, and we lost the tournament, so that one's on me, and one of them when I was 14, and we played Poly, and same thing, tournament, hit the post. Everybody loses. Tom doesn't get to play anymore. And, you know, the one thing about taking penalty kicks is, we were talking about this earlier, the best penalty kick takers in the world sit between 77 and 80% in the top European leagues, right? But the World Cup has a penalty percentage of 71%, which just goes to show you how much pressure there is on the penalty takers and what it can mean. And we've seen 10 so far, Dr. Pete.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the pressure from the World Cup. I'm assuming you're including shootout penalty kicks.
I am.
In that case, you can't find any more of a high-pressure situation for a soccer player. And the other thing is that the quality of the players in the World Cup is not quite as high as that in Europe. So the players that are in Europe, you might get a guy from Tunisia that's taken 3 penalty kicks, most of which were for his high school team.
Yeah.
And he takes one of the World Cup in front of 1 billion people. It's a little different story.
Yeah, we've seen some high-pressure mistakes in these first few games. We are finished with the first round of games. That is, every team has played at least one match, and it's been extremely interesting. I'm just really happy that the storyline has nothing to do with the ball. You guys remember when the Jubilani, James, you were talking about it earlier, with the Jubilani in 2010?
Yeah.
Oh, the Jubilani.
It was like a balloon.
Nobody liked that ball. It was like zigzagging, unpredictable. No one knew what it was going to do. You had some awesome goals come out of that, though. I think, didn't like Giovanni von Bronckhorst like hit one from like 40 yards out on the left touchline?
The ball moved so much. I mean, you thought Karius got a concussion from the Gareth Bale shot. I mean, I can't even imagine what would happen with that ball. You know
what
I mean?
Too soon.
Yeah, I think the Jubilani, I think everybody blamed their mistakes on the Jubilani. Like, strikers were like, yeah, I hated this ball, the ones that didn't score. And the goalies were like, oh, it moves all over the place, I can't track it. And the referees are like, oh, it made me miss a few calls because the ball was just swerving around.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is that we don't have any conversation about the balls. We've actually had some free kick goals. I think you said 4, Pete? 4
yeah,
direct
actually,
free kick goals?
4 direct free kick goals, and that's not including direct kicks that were headed in. Just 4 straight free kick goals, which is more than the entire 2014 tournament.
That's a money stat. But the bottom line to me is I'm just happy that most of the headlines don't have anything to do with outside of soccer, outside of the actual game. We're going to get started with Mexico versus Germany. We're going to do this the way we did our last round, and that would be I will give you a tabloid headline, and you guys will agree or disagree. James, you get to take the first one. Mexico 1, Germany 0, and my headline is simple. Mexico beats Germany.
You got to agree with it. It is factually indisputable as a headline. I would offer up an alternative headline, which would be lumbering giant walks into Mexican trap.
That's a good one. I like that. That's good.
I like it.
Then to me, that's exactly what happened. The Mexican team set up perfectly.
Yeah.
To counterattack, and Germany were just so slow with their transitions and almost like arrogant in their play. Like you could see the passion on the Mexican players' faces, and the German team just, they thought they were going to walk it down the field and eventually they were going to score because they were Germany.
Yeah, I think James has got a great point. You know, this was their oldest starting 11 for a World Cup match since their 2002 final against Brazil, which they also lost. And this game really shouldn't have been close. I mean, Mexico had 3 or 4 terrific counterattacks that just missed the last pass, and it easily could have been 3 or 4 to 1. Now, at the end of the game, it was close, and Germany ended up with 26 shots, but that was because Mexico changed their game plan to just hold on and kill the game, which they effectively did. So it was a pretty amazing performance by them, and I'll tell you, as a U.S. fan, I am terrified of Chucky Lozano.
I would agree completely with that, especially watching Mexico. We watch a lot of their matches. We watch them in the World Cup because they're rivals and we want them to lose. And if you're from Baltimore like we are, a lot of our sports fandom is based around other teams losing rather than our teams winning, because that's just kind of, that's really just the type of people we are.
Yeah.
And we watch Mexico and hope they lose. But honestly, this is the best performance I have ever seen from Mexico. They were cohesive. They were composed. You know, a lot of times in the games that we'd seen before, one of their players would do something dumb, spit at somebody or hack somebody when they shouldn't have, get a red card, and they crap this game away. But, I mean, Chucky Lozano, from his composure and his finish, cutting the ball back, beating Neuer near post, terrific finish. And really the only player that was not composed in this match was Chicharito. His passing honestly gifted the Germans life when they shouldn't have had it, because some of the counterattacks were 2-on-1 and against Hummels, who looked like he was running in sand. And James was talking about how slow the rest of the defenders were getting back.
Yeah, there was there's actually a stat that I read where on the Mexican counterattack where they scored, you had Lozano running down the field at top speed of about 29 kilometers per hour. The referee was running down the field to keep up with play at about 21 kilometers per hour.
Wow.
And meanwhile, Kimmich, the defender, was running back to keep up with play at about 17 kilometers per hour. So slower than the referee.
That was so slow, man. And
that's
I like
ridiculous.
Kimmich.
I like Kimmich a lot, too.
I thought Kimmich was as fast.
I don't know what was going on there, but that is a real stat.
And that's not the only time that they looked so slow. I mean, how many times did Hummels versus Chicharito, you know, like how many times did that happen? I mean, granted, Germany was pushed all the way up, but their game plan didn't work. Mexico's game plan was superb. And we were talking about this a lot when Leroy Sané got cut from Germany. And basically, I thought it was arrogance. James, you agreed with me that they would take a dynamic player and basically say, you don't fit in our system, even though you're probably the most dynamic player on our team by a pretty long shot.
Probably the most informed German player coming into this tournament. Kroos is up there, too. But his stats in the Prem last season and winning Young Player of the Season, I mean, he was coming in on form.
And as somebody who's a big Tottenham fan, like I watch him play against Tottenham and I'm terrified of him. And I saw Germany cut him. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, he is probably the best soccer player who's sitting at home watching this World Cup, other than maybe Jeff Cameron.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, James and I were talking about just exactly what they needed when they're down 1-0. We talked about this in the preview for Germany. When you're down 1-0, and it seems to me that Germany and Lowe, their manager, basically said, we don't anticipate ever being down 1-0. So we don't need to have that wild card come off the bench. I mean, honestly, we were talking before. Honestly, Muller's not playing at the 9. He's playing right wing. I mean, I don't understand that at all. I mean, I know he was in and out, but Timo Werner should have been starting this match because you knew Mexico is going to sit deep. It's not like they have miles to run behind, and Werner is like a Jamie Vardy type of forward where he needs balls to be put through, and Muller's the guy to find goals for you. It just didn't make any sense to me.
I was shocked at how poor their attack was in this game, and it just goes to show you that if you need to bring on Mario Gomez to boost your attack, you're in big trouble. And I just don't understand leaving Sané at home. It makes no sense. But I wouldn't get too out of sorts about this losing this game in terms of what Germany could do going forward. Their World Cup is not over yet. Everybody is acting like they're done. But do you know who was the only squad to win the World Cup after losing their opener?
Not France. Not Brazil. Italy?
Spain. 2010. Oh,
2010.
Sure. Germany actually lost their opener in 1982, but they went on to reach the final that year. So I wouldn't mail it in yet for them. They could still make some noise in this tournament for sure. There's a lot of soccer to be played, so don't count them out yet.
So Pete is not shaken. James, are you shaken?
I'm not shaken, no.
All right, moving on to the Brazil versus Switzerland match. I got my tablet headline for you guys. Switzerland pushes around Neymar and Brazil.
I'm not sure if pushing around is the right word. Fouling the crap out of Neymar is probably the phrase you were looking for. 10 times in the game, which is the most in a game since 1998.
Alan Shearer.
But I thought the Swiss game plan was good. I mean, what were the chances of them getting a draw on this going in? And they fouled the game to death. And there were a couple of questionable calls that there were some arguments about VAR. The Brazilian Federation wants answers about that.
But we demand answers.
But other than that, I mean, you shouldn't need to rely on VAR to win this game. They should have won it by other means. And I, other than Coutinho's singular effort, which was incredible, and I forgot how good he was.
Yeah, man, that's his shot. What a shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's got five of his 11 goals for Brazil are from outside the box. And I think when you score that percentage of goals from outside the box, that tells you how good a player is, unless they're taking 100 shots a year from outside the box like Xhaka. But other than that, I thought that Brazil looked flat. And, you know, Neymar has not played in a competitive match. I look back because I was like, oh, when was the last time he played a competitive match? I forgot how long it's been since he got injured. It was back in February.
Yeah.
And, end of February, it was in a French league match. The Neymar being the best player in the world, you know, all the World Cup stuff, a lot of it is just media hype. I mean, when's the last time you saw a guy that's missed that many months just come out of the blue and win the Golden Boot? I was just thinking that the other day.
I don't think you see it often, and I mean, form is so important coming into a tournament like this. He's coming in totally cold.
The last person to do that was probably Paolo Rossi in 1982. He was the guy that got banned for 2 years and then got put on the Italian roster anyways and ended up winning the Golden Boot.
But he might have had a good club season.
You know? No, he didn't. He was coming back off of being banned.
Oh, he got banned in his club?
Yeah, he was banned, period.
So he didn't play soccer for 2 years?
No.
Wait, I'm not getting it here. You're saying he didn't play at all.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, he's awesome. But so, I mean, we're talking about Brazil 1, Switzerland 1. And Neymar was fouled an amazing amount of times, including once where they tried to pull his shorts off. But the goal for Switzerland, to me, I thought Brazil's talking about how it was a push on their center back by the Swiss forward, right? And to me, I don't know too many center backs who are 6'5" who would get pushed off a ball like that. I mean, I didn't think there was that much in it. You guys were kind of disagreeing with me. I didn't think there was that much in it, and I don't think that goal should have been called away.
No, I think that's a foul. I mean, that call gets made or and it doesn't get made. And it's different every week, you know, when you're watching a game. But it's a foul. If you're backing up and you're about to jump and you get shoved in the back, you just can't jump. It doesn't matter how hard it was. You know, it doesn't have to push you down to the ground. You physically can't make that jump. It's a foul.
I guess we watch a lot of the Prem. Maybe that's our problem. Like, there's wrestling matches.
Stuff in the box in the Prem just doesn't get called. That might get called on a day. It might not be. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it can go either way. But that's something where I want to understand that call and Jesus being dragged down in the box. I mean, those are two outstanding incidents where I just don't understand what the role of VAR is, VAR, yeah. And mm-hmm. how it's being utilized. Because to me, if there's a goal, you look at it, right? Or if there's someone goes down in the box, you got to review it. And if you even take a second to look at it, well, it's plain as day that it's a foul.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that side of it. I mean, Zuber was the striker in question for Switzerland, and I didn't think there was that much in it. I had another problem with the goal, and that is that the ball got swept in from a corner kick. And it's like the fourth time in this World Cup where I've seen a ball get swept in and drop in the six, and not like on the edge of the six, the 6-yard box that the goalie, I know my college coach would go absolutely ape if the ball ever dropped there. And this ball was right in the very center, and I don't know what Allison was doing. That's a ball that needs to be punched away no matter what. And it's like Allison was rooted to the spot. He had such a good season for Roma, and he's looks like he's going to end up at Real Madrid. If he can't punch a ball, if he can't command the box, then Brazil is in big trouble for one thing. For another, I mean, do you guys think that the fact that out of the last 12 shots on goal in a World Cup against Brazil, 10 of them have gone in, do you think that there's any kind of complex that could come into this match in, you know, no confidence in their goalie?
No, I don't think the goalie has been Brazil's problem. That Germany game, I didn't think the goalie played horrific. It was just half of those goals were tap-ins. So that stat is definitely skewed by the fact that they got slaughtered by Germany. But it does raise some questions, and I actually like Ederson better than Allison. And, you know, as far as him not coming out on that one, I agree with you completely. There should never be a ball that falls in the 6-yard box and get swept in, or even within the 10-yard box. I mean, that is a clear fault on the goalie's part, and it cost him 2 points in this one.
Yeah, I think obviously it's a mistake. I think we're seeing some nerves across the board from this first round of games, just in attack, in defense, in goalkeeping. And I think that it's down to that. And I think we also see that stat in attack where we have Brazil and Germany getting 20-plus shots on goal. I mean, no, 20 plus shots in a game, but only 7 on goal. So I think attacking needs to be better, and goalkeeping and defending needs to improve in the next round.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Brazil will be fine. I liked a lot of their interchanging with their passing and their dribbling. They're one of the most interesting teams to watch, as they always should be. It was nice to see them have that flair. Didn't really come off all that well because the Swiss were playing the opposite. They're fouling. But I want to give some credit to the Swiss for being unafraid. There's been a few teams in this World Cup that have impressed me with how composed they are. And the Swiss are there. Iceland, to me, is there. I think that, you know, they had a terrific game, Iceland did. And the Swiss here, a lot of people talk about them being highly ranked in the world and not deserving it, including myself, although I don't put any stock in FIFA's ranking system. But I really thought that they played unafraid. Granted, they did foul Neymar 10 times, which is absurd, but they got their point, and you have to think that looking forward for them will be positive, and they're in good shape to maybe make something happen.
Yeah, I think they've got a great shot at getting through in this group, and they've only lost once in their last 23 matches, and they've got 16 wins in that time, so that's nothing to sniff at, you know, in European qualifying. And I thought it was a superb effort by Barami. I mean, he ran himself into the ground.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Over the course of 70 minutes. He was on Neymar a lot of the game. And I thought he might have been man of the match.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, he definitely negated a lot of the Brazilian energy, which is saying something. I think he's 31 or 32, or maybe it just seems like that because he was in the Prem and he's been all over the place. Yeah, he's older, and I thought he had a terrific game, and the Swiss really showed up. You had to be impressed with them. Speaking of teams that show up, the next match that we'll talk about is England versus Tunisia here. And I thought Tunisia really showed up in this game. England 2, Tunisia 1. My tabloid headline for Dr. Pete will be Harry Kane rescue mission, which is exactly what you texted me when the game got into, what, like the 70th minute?
This was euphoria, Thomas. Another Harry Kane winner with minutes to spare. Is there anything better, honestly?
Well, there's a lot.
There's a lot better. Yeah,
is there anything better? I mean, unfortunately, I missed the first half because I was in the OR operating on a patient who needed to be operated on, Thomas. I know you and James watch the games while you're working, but I can't, okay? People need operations.
Can't or won't.
Things need to be removed from people's body. but I didn't have my Harry Kane jersey on in the OR, but I did have my Harry Kane briefs on.
I really hope this.
No, Harry Kane was incredible, and I think he is starting to solidify himself as one of the best players, top five players in the world, come maybe a year from now. And I saw something that said that he's the youngest captain in World Cup history.
For England?
I think it's just World Cup history, and I was like, that can't be right. Someone must have been younger, but he's 24, and even the crappy teams, the captains are guys who've been on the team for 4-8 years. They're usually players that have been there for longer, but that seems pretty incredible to me. Anyways, he definitely took this game on his shoulders, and he only had a couple of shots. He took advantage of his opportunities, and unlike a lot of the stars on other superpowers, he got the job done.
James?
I don't know what Harry Kane being captain says about England, but I don't think it's flattering. But he did get the job done on that day. And my alternative headline for this game was actually mosquitoes near extinction as 7 billion die in Harry Kane's open mouth. which is how he runs around the field, mouth agape.
It's really mean.
I'm just calling it like I see it. Anyway, he scored 2 goals. I think it was really funny that Tunisia spent the entire game basically hugging him to the ground.
Yeah.
Except on the 2 corners where they leave him unmarked at the far post.
Yeah.
Probably the time you want to mark him the most.
Yeah, so this game is really interesting. I mean, it's England in a World Cup, and everybody is looking for them to make the mistake. And if they had even drawn this game, I just think that all the goodwill that they have built up before this tournament would have been out the window. Absolutely. And it just would have been vultures coming in and just picking apart the carcass of the English national team. I mean, that's why this win was so important. Harry Kane's early goal was so important. For the same reason, get them off to a good start, settle all the nerves. He scores on a rebound after everybody else on England just refuses to score. Raheem Sterling refuses to score, although James will say he was offsides, which he was. Jesse Lingard refuses to score. John Stones misses a volley from like 12 yards out that there was no one anywhere near him. I don't understand how he didn't connect on that. And it just looked, I mean, they looked really, really nervous in this match. Harry Kane, I don't think he did that much in the run of play, but he does that sometimes, Pete. I mean, you watch him. He doesn't do that much in the run of play, but man, he gets it done when he's close range. He gets in a good position and he scores. A couple things of note in this match. The formation to me was interesting. Having Maguire push out from a center back position, and both Maguire and Stones at different points in the game actually handled the ball, and by that I mean dribbled the ball, into the 18 because Tunisia was sitting deeper, as England in the first half really laid it on thick, and they really were dynamic even from their center backs. A really interesting formation. You had Trippier, who was probably second in man of the match. I mean, he played better than Kane in just that he had more touches on the ball. But what did you guys think of the formation?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's definitely something new that we haven't really seen England bring to major tournaments in the past. Playing 3 at the back, 2 wing backs. And that it's an interesting 3 at the back, too, because they basically in this game played Stones, Maguire, and Kyle Walker. That last one, Kyle Walker being there, is what led to Tunisia's goal, actually, as he gave away a really stupid penalty.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's down to him not being really practiced in playing center back and just making a bad decision or what, but I mean, it's a little bit unexplainable on his part. Formation wise, I do like them being able to bring up a center back against a packed defense. I think that can open it up. I think Maguire does have some good passing in his locker. I think Stones might also be able to fill that role. It's definitely interesting, but I think what they're going to have to watch out for, and they didn't look like they had a lot of bite outside of Harry Kane's goals. And going back to you calling it the Harry Kane rescue mission, if Harry Kane all of a sudden stops producing, or if he gets game planned, you know, out by the opposing team, where are the goals going to come from for England?
I absolutely agree with that. You have other players in this tournament. We'll talk about Lewandowski in the next match, who are their primary goal scorers. And if they don't have a good game, then what happens to the team? I think that Harry Kane right now led his team to a 2-1 win by scoring that goal in the 91st minute. You know, we were excited about it. We're big England fans, Dr. Pete. James, I don't know how you feel about it. I don't really care. But but I think that by winning this match, maybe it'll settle Dele Alli, Jesse Lingard, Raheem Sterling. I think they'll get a good chance. I think Tunisia is better than people think they are. They played better, and that's why I thought that they were much better than I was expecting. They weren't too overawed by the entire experience, which we've seen from some of these teams, and they didn't get blitzed. But, you know, in the other match in this group, we saw a team that did get blitzed, and that's who England plays next. So expect the offensive lineup. Do you guys think that Sterling plays next match against Panama?
Yeah, I think he'll get another start up top. Obviously, he was not effective in this game, and Rashford came on and looked terrific. But I think they'll give him one more shot. If he plays poorly in that one, then he's not going to be starting against Belgium. And in terms of England's schedule, I mean, this is the perfect setup for a young team. They start out against Tunisia, then they play Panama. And like you said, you can settle the nerves. This win will give them a lot of confidence. You know, it's amazing. Harry Kane scores 2 goals in his first game. And the narrative that an England guy can't score in big games goes away from him immediately. I mean, this buys him 4 or 5 tournament games. If he doesn't score, he's not going to get that much criticism, which is great for his confidence and the team's confidence.
James, anything to add to this match?
No, I just think that England's going to definitely have to tighten up going forward in the group. And I think they've given themselves a head start. I couldn't see Panama or Tunisia beating them out of this group. But in the later stages of the tournament, I think they're going to have to be a lot tighter with their play.
I would agree completely. We will pivot to that game, Belgium versus Panama. I don't want to spend too much time on this one because it really wasn't that interesting to me, other than the fact that Belgium started really slowly. You have the star-studded Belgium team, Eden Hazard, Romelu Lukaku, Kevin De Bruyne, and really the only thing I'll say, other than the slow start for them would probably worry me a little bit, is that Panama looks pretty overwhelmed with the tournament, especially from a talent perspective, and I think that's actually more embarrassing for the U.S. as they qualified over the U.S.
Thomas, the reason that Panama looks overwhelmed being in the tournament is because they don't belong at the World
Cup. They're so bad.
You and I watched them in the qualifiers.
They are.
This is not a good side at all.
Yeah.
The United States beat them 4-0, and I'm just disgusted watching them play that we somehow found a way to finish below them in CONCACAF. CONCACAF is terrible. There, I said.
We talk about it all the time, and we're still bitter. It's going to come up in every episode. We are absolutely bitter to lose in the group that we're in. Let's get my headline out of the way here. Belgium and Red Rom come to life in the second half to smash the newcomers 3-0. James, anything you want to add to this game, really, besides maybe Kevin De Bruyne's positioning?
KDB is definitely playing a lot deeper for this Belgian setup than he ever plays for Man City. I think it's interesting because even though, you know, he definitely hustles for City, it's not his defensive qualities that are why you're picking him.
No.
You're picking him for the pass like he made to Romelu Lukaku for the second Belgian goal.
That was so sweet.
And he showed why you want him around the edge of the box, not sitting back in front of the back four. But Martinez is the coach. He's been criticized for this, But at the end of the day, if Kevin De Bruyne is going to make the pass that leads to the assist for the goal, it's a win for Belgium.
Yeah, that outside of the right foot, I think it was, bent to the back post from a position where he's almost square to the goal, getting enough bend on it to foil the defenders. And, well, that'll take me into the next question. Dr. Pete, Romelu Lukaku for me was a player that I would put money on in the Golden Boot. Now, there are some players we'll talk about later that are also in the running, but what did you think about Romelu Lukaku coming to life in this one?
I really enjoy watching him play. And one of the fun things about the World Cup is normally I watch Romelu Lukaku and I don't want him to score. In this game, I'm like, wow, this is just fun watching him and KDB, and I want them to score and play well. And that's one of the fun things about the World Cup. Guys you're usually rooting against, suddenly you're rooting for them. Watching this game, the thought that came to my head was, how different would the Prem League or would the Prem season have been if Chelsea had hauled in Lukaku?
Oh, that's a good point.
And I'm not trying to start a 20-minute conversation, but I think he is an incredible player. I think he's got definitely has a shot at Golden Boot. I think he had the best odds, you know, for putting a bet on, and I meant to do that with our shady friend who's a bookie. But didn't get it in time.
Big, tall, gaggly guy. Sure. Yeah, I would agree completely with Lukaku, as we said before. I mean, you just watch how much bigger he is than the Panama defenders. Even though the Panama defense had that one guy who was 215 pounds, I mean, Lukaku looked bigger. He's like 6'3", burly, can run with speed. Not a great first touch, but it doesn't really matter when you're getting a ball swept into you. Even so, his one-on-one was a great finish, and I think that even Lukaku could score 5 goals in the group stages, and 5 goals a lot of the time is enough to win the Golden Boot anyways, so I think that would have been a good bet. We'll move on to another strike force that is dominated by one player on the end of it. Belgium has a lot of options to score behind Lukaku, but Poland does not have a lot of options to score behind Lewandowski.
Ew.
Senegal 2, Poland 1. My headline for this one, James, is poor Poland can't overcome plucky Senegal.
I'll take that one. I mean, Senegal worked really hard in this game. I think they wanted it more than Poland. And I think Poland's quality in midfield and defense let them down at the end of some really poor decisions by Krakowiak, who was just bad. I know he scored Poland's goal towards the end, but every other aspect of his game and leading up to that point, he was bad, and he's the one that set up for his for the second Senegal goal.
Yeah, so Senegal gets an own goal here. It's not one of those own goals that I really don't like. It was a shot from distance that was redirected. It's not like it was going wide. It was redirected, and sure, you could say that. I mean, it would have been saved or whatever, but I don't like own goals when they're redirections. I mean, own goals to me are like we talked about before, Phil Jones corner pocket, you know, just sliding and just smashing the ball into the corner. That's an own goal to me. An own goal is not it hit me in the shin and rolled at a 15-degree different angle than it was before, and that's an own goal. I think that's really unfair to the defenders. But anyway, Senegal gets that own goal. And then the second goal, which I'll let you take, Dr. Pete, we're having some reffing issues here. James and I discussed it a little bit, but essentially what happened was the Senegalese player left the field, and he's allowed to come back on when the ref waves him back on. He left the field because he was injured, and normally it's when a ball goes out of play, or even if a ball goes into the corner. It's supposed to be at a time when the match is at a low point. And in this case, James, you were talking about how they're playing head tennis in the middle of the field, essentially. It's a weird time to have a guy come off the bench, or come off the field, I mean, come on the field. And it's like, you know, what are they doing? And all of a sudden, that guy stepped onto the field, he was on sides, and boom, Senegal smashed the ball forward. Szczesny comes flying off his line, he's beaten by a simple touch by this guy who the defenders could have no idea where he was because he wasn't on the field before, and it's 2-0 here. Pete, what are your thoughts on that?
I thought this play was hilarious. The guy scored maybe 5 or 7 seconds after he was waved on.
Yeah.
And I'm venturing a guess here, but that has to be the fastest goal that's ever been scored by a, quote, injured player being waved back on.
His sprint speed,
I mean, I'm not even talking about I'm not even talking about in the history of the World Cup. I'm talking about in the history of soccer. Yeah. How could you possibly think about the circumstances of an injured player coming back on the field? Most of the time, they're sort of limping back on. And most of the time, the ref is waving them on after a dead ball, like a normal reffing move.
Yeah.
But this guy just happened to be coming on at just the right time when the guy kicked it 20 yards over his defender's head. He was on sides. The goalie was stunned and didn't come out at the right time. It was really unlucky for Poland, but I was kind of laughing the more I watched it.
It was like the perfect storm of mess-ups from everybody. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't disagree with I don't think the ref was wrong to wave Niang back on at that point. At that point, the ball is getting headed back and forth in midfield, doing nothing. You have Senegal down a player, and the longer you keep him out, the more advantage you're giving Poland. At that point, the ball is just bouncing around. He waves the player back on. Krakowiak decides to turn around and hits one of the worst passes that I've ever seen. I don't know what he was going for. If he was trying to smash it back to the keeper or what. He literally had his defender 20 yards behind him. He could have just passed it back to his feet. He lobs his own defender. Niang is in a dead sprint from just coming on the field. And you're right. Those 5 seconds he was on the field was the time it took him to sprint from the 50-yard line. Touch the ball past Szczesny and tap it in. And I think Szczesny's a little bit at fault here, but I think he panicked seeing what was happening in front of him, came off his line. He had no chance to get there before Niang did.
I think it's tough on Poland. I would have liked to see that goal taken away, honestly. But there's no official grounds to do that. You can't take that away. And
are you crazy?
I just think, actually, it's like what Pete said. You know, it was hilarious in a lot of levels since we aren't huge Poland fans. But I think it's a perfect representation of what happens in a World Cup. You know, you have referees from countries that are small and don't have a lot of spotlight on them. And I think sometimes the occasion gets to referees. I think they don't want to be the referee that gives the wrong red card. They don't want to be the referee that gives the wrong penalty kick. And VAR helps them a lot with that. And I think a lot of these referees struggled to put their mark on the game, not in a way to make them the headliners, but to control the match and calm everything down. I think a lot of these referees have nerves too.
If anyone's at fault for that goal, it's Krakowiak.
You're just hating on Krakowiak.
Yeah, it was a terrible play. The ref has done nothing wrong. The guy's onside. He's been waved back onto the field. The ref did nothing wrong. Krakowiak, make a simple pass, and then there's no issue.
We will move to a match where there was a refereeing decision that decided the game, but it was absolutely merited. And it is Japan 2, Colombia 1. My headline for this one, James, is Colombia hands the samurai the gift of 3 points.
Now, that's a headline. I like that.
That was a little more poetic than what I've been doing.
Wow.
That was...
Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah, mostly.
Because I saw that same one on ESPN.
You did not see it on ESPN. You might have seen it on Twitter, but you did not see it on ESPN. ESPN is not covering the World Cup. They're not covering the World Cup. Their headline there's like 7 headlines in United States sports. The only one that had anything to do with World Cup was that the beer supply in Moscow is running low. That is the only thing they mentioned about the World Cup.
Is that not a problem?
I think that's terrible.
It's a problem.
They're just totally butthurt that Fox has the rights. That's all I can think. Like, because this is ridiculous. It's the biggest American sports channel that we have, and we're trying to get people to, you know, get into the sport. And sure, our team's not in it, but these games are awesome. The drama's awesome. It's the World Cup. And, you know, people watch the Olympics. They watch curling, which I actually kind of like. But we'll watch any sport in the Olympics. They'll watch soccer. Mm-hmm. They'll watch it if it's on. It's on at, like, 2 p.m. There's nothing else on but, like, soap operas. Like, they're going to watch it. So I'm annoyed by ESPN. I've been over it before. Back to Japan and Colombia. So in this one, we had a red card / PK combo. I think that's the first one of the World Cup, James. First red card PK combo, first red card period.
Yeah, all of the above.
And for this one, I mean, it was clear as day, right, James?
Everyone knew it. The guy, it was funny watching it, the defender. I mean, as soon as he stuck his arm out and the ball hit off of it, he landed and he just kind of fell back like, oh, God. and no one even tried to, you know, usually there's like surrounding the ref and people are arguing like, no, no, no. Well, no one even tried. They're just like, yep, he did it.
I think that
deliberate handball to block a goal-scoring opportunity, penalty kick, red card, and in this match going into it, we talked about how how much the Japanese defense is in disarray right now, but 10 guys versus 11 guys flips everything.
That helps you out a lot.
Japan becomes the favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought Colombia actually did well to fight back and tie the game up. But in the end, I mean, the extra player, I think, was telling, and you lose on a header to Japan. It's not the best way to go out.
James, what did you think about them leaving Hymus the Hammer on the bench?
Well, I guess I was reading that he had a slight calf injury, but still healthy enough to come on and play the end of the game.
Yeah,
I think, he was probably, it might have been precautionary. It might have been a little bit of arrogance. I don't think, we definitely underestimated the Japanese team. Not that they didn't have some circumstances go their way, but Colombia might have been guilty of the same. That being said, they should have the players to see that game out, and a really, really poor decision by Sanchez there really ruined the day for him.
I don't really think there's a lot to say about Colombia beyond that, because Cuadrado was very poor in this match, the Juve winger, but they're down to 10 men. You could get a red card in the second minute and you could say it's a reactionary red card, but the bottom line's the same. If you go down to 10 men in the second minute, the game is probably over. You're not really going to have a chance to win that game. You're just hoping for the draw. But we'll move on to a game where we had another player's injury management as the headliner here. Russia 3, Egypt 1, Dr. Pete. And the headline for this one is, Salah starts, but the hosts rule the Pharaohs in Russia.
Yeah, your game plan of trying to concede the Uruguay game and beating the other two opponents, including Russia on their home soil, was absolutely idiotic. And when I saw Salah in the starting lineup, my blood was boiling. There is no reason that he should not have come on in the 70th minute in that first game when they were tied 0-0.
And you don't anger easily.
Yeah, and you're telling me that he makes that much of a recovery in 3 days. I guarantee you that Salah comes out in a month or 2 months or whatever and says, yeah, I could have played in that game, at least come on as a sub. I think it's absurd. I think they deserve to go home. They deserve to get their ass kicked today.
Yeah.
And their plan was stupid.
Yeah. It's absolutely a small-minded game plan. It's if you're going to game plan the World Cup, you have to beat what's in front of you. You have to play every game like it's the last game, and you have to go out to win.
Every match, absolutely.
Coming into the Uruguay game and saying, okay, well, we're in the 75th minute and it's 0-0. We thought we were going to lose this game, so we weren't going to risk Salah. It is so bad to think that way, and it's such a poor mentality. And I agree with you 100%. They deserve to be going home, and looks like that's what's going to happen.
Really, the first team eliminated without being eliminated. Saudi Arabia is terrible in that group, and I think that Egypt could take some points there, but, Russia looks like a home team. Their ranking is 70th in the world, but they didn't have to qualify. So their ranking means nothing because they didn't have to play anybody. They didn't have to play any emotionally charged matches. They automatically qualified because they're Russia. They're the host. And you see the host bump. It's statistically proven. It's at least a game, which is a big deal in a World Cup. 3 full points or a game in a knockout round. You just knew coming in that Russia was not going to lose to Saudi Arabia. And to me, it was between Egypt and Russia. And I'll give Russia the edge all day because they are at home. But I wasn't expecting Russia to absolutely take it to Egypt the way they did. This game was 3-0. Russia look in form, for lack of a better term.
They look hungry, absolutely. I think they're full of confidence coming off that game against Saudi Arabia. What a great game to start off the tournament with.
Yeah.
First off, followed up by Egypt, is another just poor team. And I think at this point, if I'm not wrong, if Uruguay draws Saudi Arabia tomorrow, Egypt are officially eliminated.
Yeah, they'll be officially eliminated. That's correct.
And that's not a great spot to be in.
You guys just got here.
Yeah.
The thing that sucks is that if I'm an Egyptian fan, it all goes back to the 70th minute in the Uruguay game, exactly what you guys said. There's no reason for Mohamed Salah to not come in that game. A player that you need an X factor, you need a guy who can score a goal. Uruguay was was not overpowering them in any way, shape, or form. And it just would take that one little play, the inches that Salah can create in the box to maybe win that match and change your World Cup perspective. And instead, you didn't bring him in. Everybody's going to second guess you. And exactly what Pete said, in a month, Salah's PR people are going to have him come out and say, oh yeah, he was absolutely ready to play, but the coach said, you know, he didn't want to play him. Because at that point, the coach is fired and Salah doesn't need to worry about him at all.
Well, I don't think the coach gets fired because you're forgetting that this is all Ramos's fault.
Oh, yeah.
So Sergio anything, Ramos, sure. So it's a free pass for the entire Egyptian national team. Because Ramos sabotaged their World Cup.
I don't believe that at all. But I honestly think Egypt is a better team. And I thought they played all right in that first match against Uruguay. You know, they didn't wow me, but they were missing their best player. And if he plays, things change. A few matches left here that we're going to cover. Kind of devoid in incident, if you will. Sweden 1, South Korea 0. And in this one, Sweden outfights South Korea to first in the group. Dr. Pete, this game actually was pretty open because of the Germany-Mexico result, and this group is wide open.
It was almost like these teams didn't like each other, and as far as I know, there's not any war history between the two teams.
Oh, actually, I do have an anecdote for that. We had met a guy from Sweden, and he was telling us that not South Korea, but North Korea ordered a whole fleet of Volvos from Sweden and never paid for them. It was like 20 years ago and they still talk about it. South Korea and North Korea are very different countries, but I don't know. There could have been some spillage from that incident.
That was definitely worth adding. Yeah. That is a ridiculous story. But there were 25 fouls in the first half, 38 fouls in the match.
Yeah.
So There were a lot of dead balls in this one. But like you said, this was not a very entertaining match. My boy's son didn't do much, and he just doesn't have much to work with that team. But I thought the most interesting part of this game was when South Korea was on a counterattack after the penalty shout by Sweden, and they stopped the counterattack to go into VAR. And you're not supposed to do that. So you're supposed to do it when the team's in a neutral position on the field, which they were not, or after a dead ball. And the interesting thing that I found out was that, let's say that South Korea scores on that counterattack, and you decide that you're going to review the penalty that Sweden ultimately won, then South Korea's goal actually gets wiped
that's
out.
That's crazy.
So you pick up two goals. Isn't that awesome?
Crazy. I didn't think about that side of VAR.
It took me 2 hours to find the answer, by the way.
Yeah, I've been looking for a lot of stats like that, and a lot of information like that. It's been very difficult with VAR. It is so gray. I mean, they used VAR during the Senegal goal where the ref waved the guy on. I don't know why they used VAR, because there's nothing that can be overturned there. And they used it anyway. So what was the purpose of using that? I don't know. And VAR, I think this is what VAR brings to you. The flip side of that is that VAR did confirm a good penalty here. James, 1-0 Sweden, the tackle comes in late, and VAR gets it right.
Absolutely. That's the right call. It's a penalty. So good on VAR, no matter what else was going on in the game. South Korea just did not have I don't think they ever looked like they were in this one to begin with. They didn't have what they needed to take care of Sweden, and Hong Min-sun was pretty much plowing the field by himself.
He got fouled so many times,
didn't really have anybody to play with, just really putting in a lot of effort and not getting anything back out of it.
Yeah, so this match goes down to Sweden here, and you have a very interesting group developing between Germany, Mexico, Sweden, and South Korea. James, you alluded to a little bit of German arrogance coming out with their basically leaving Sané behind and honestly playing Müller on right wing and Timo Werner up top, and just the way they approached the Mexico game. Some things came out after that match where apparently Hummels was second-guessing the manager's tactics, and Marco Reus was talking about how the manager was saving him for important matches or important situations. I mean, that doesn't sound good to me, and I would be worried if I'm Germany playing Sweden. They look stout, and at the same time, I would be worried if I'm Germany playing South Korea, because while they didn't win the game, they're in it to fight, and they're going to chip away, and if they squeak a goal on you, you're out of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, South Korea is going to keep fighting. They're not going to give up, and they're not out of it by any means. Sweden is probably not the team that Germany would want to play coming out of the Mexico game, just because Sweden is going to give them a tough match. They're regional rivals, no love lost between their soccer teams, and it's going to be a tough game, and Germany's going to have to figure out what went wrong and deal with it.
I think that's the one thing you can count on with Germany is their mentality, and their mentality in these tournaments are the reason that they have the highest average finish at 3.5. I mean that's the semifinals every single year, pretty much. And the reason for that is because their mentality is so good. I think they still should get through. I think they're good enough to do that. But all of a sudden, if you don't win the group, you end up playing the one seed from another group, and you end up playing Brazil or something like that. So Germany's got to put it together, and we have a really interesting group resolving itself there. We'll move on to the next match. Serbia 1, Costa Rica 0, James. And for this one, it's simple. I'm not going to talk too much about it, but Kolarov takes the 3 points.
My man, Manchester City legend. You don't want him taking a free kick on his left foot. And, I mean, this wasn't really I wouldn't call it an eventful game. I didn't think there was a lot really going on. Kolarov tucks that away, and that's a huge goal for Serbia. But other than that, I mean, we saw Milinkovic-Savic looking really good, but not really linking up well with his teammates. I don't know if that's because of not being included in a lot of qualifiers, not really getting a lot of game time, but he had some really good touches, some really good passes, great bike attempt, but he also looked gassed after 75, 80 minutes. So I think Serbia has some work to do, for sure, but they've given themselves every chance coming out of that Costa Rica game.
Yeah, I didn't think this was too exciting of a game. Costa Rica were sort of a one-hit wonder from the 2014 tournament. Now they've got the second oldest squad at the tournament, and it looked like the second oldest squad. And I don't expect them to make much noise, but I was impressed by Serbia. I thought they had some nice movement, and I think they've got a shot, certainly, to make some noise in the tournament.
I like their game plan. I like 1-0 wins. I like them in league play. I especially like them in tournament play, because to me, that means that you can close out a game. Mexico is a perfect example of that. 1-0 wins, 3 points is all that matters there. All right, so moving forward in the World Cup, we have Portugal, Morocco, Uruguay, Saudi Arabia, Iran versus Spain. A lot of eyes on Ronaldo there against Morocco, a plucky Morocco team. We'll see what Portugal can do there. Can he carry them through? Uruguay versus Saudi Arabia. I mean, Dr. Pete, we talked about this. Will Saudi Arabia be the worst World Cup team ever? I mean, Uruguay did not look great in their first game, and they still could beat them 3 or 5-0 if Saudi Arabia is rattled like they were in game one. Iran versus Spain. I think this is a very interesting clash between two styles. You'll have Iran sitting deep and Spain passing the ball around them. And it'll come down to whether or not Diego Costa is in a mood, I think. And I do believe Spain will get the win here. But I think that's a good game to watch tactically. I don't think it'll have fireworks in it. But tactically, it'll be interesting. And then on Thursday, we have Denmark-Australia. Let's go Aussies. It's going to be a really interesting game there. The Danes. Pete, you got your Christian Eriksen there, and, you know, Denmark versus Australia going to be possibly the best matchup in terms of two teams on equal footing. I'm interested to see that one. France-Peru, plucky Peru team, can France put it together? And then Argentina versus Croatia. Dr. Pete, is that the match that you'll be watching?
Argentina-Croatia? Yeah. I think that'll be a good match. That's not the one I'm most excited about, though. I think tomorrow's games are going to be really interesting with, especially Portugal. I could see Ronaldo getting a hat trick tomorrow. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're talking about a guy with 6 goals in his first 2 games. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
I don't want that to happen.
I'm not saying I want it to happen. I'm just saying I'm looking at that Morocco matchup. And do you think Ronaldo doesn't want to solidify his career with a golden boot in the World Cup?
With every fiber of my being, I do not want that to happen.
James, who is the current World Cup leader in goals in the 2018 World Cup?
It's our good friend, a guy that I'm very familiar with.
Yes, you are.
From Richard Dunn's tenure at Manchester City. It'd be Mr. Own Goal.
Augie, baby! Five own goals, leading the race.
You've been five?
Leading the race for the Golden Boot. Five own goals. Catch that one, Ronaldo.
Used to be a star player for Manchester United on some of their deep league runs.
Shut up. You mean Manchester City from like 1950 until 2005.
Didn't you know somebody that had an Augie jersey?
No. I think Brother Joey was going to get one, but he got like a Chicharito jersey.
He got a virus.
I was going to guess Joey. I was going to guess it had to be Joey.
Probably, Joey should probably get one. Anyway, so good group of games coming up, and the World Cup is in full flight now. We'll see if the nerves continue. We'll see if the penalty kicks continue. We're happy that most of the talk is about the tournament, about the matches being played, and the actual gameplay. And the next group of games will set up that third round of matches that we'll all be looking forward to. Those are where all the groups will be decided, except for Group A, with Egypt pretty much being eliminated. A lot of those groups are up for grabs, with Germany losing, with Brazil drawing, and I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the superpowers show up in Game 2. Germany, France, Brazil all have something to prove. I think you're going to see some lopsided scores. And I will say, if you have a chance, if you're interested in the VAR stuff, ESPN FC does not typically have a lot of good stuff, but they review every VAR call and explain things, and they give a rating 1 out of 10 whether they think it was used correctly. And I think it's very informative, and I would check it out. They update it after each game.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Like, we'll be looking forward to a lot of these matches coming up, and we'll leave it at that. For James Lewis and Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week.